All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Call the May 19th Data Board meeting to order. So, Corinne, would you please call the board, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paradise.
Here.
Mr. Kennedy.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Bruce.
Here.
Neil Form.
Thank you. Corinne, would you continue with staff and public?
All right. As I point to you, please state your name and your organization. We'll start here.
Okay. John Springsteen, ADA.
Pat Quan.
I'm the Bridges and Resources Energy.
Mark Davis, ADA.
Alan Bayers,
Forest Thunder, ADA.
Kevin Hamilton, Advocate.
Dan Burton, Pentex.
Nick Shmoriak, ADA.
Bob Shepchick, ADA.
Jim Hemsap, ADA.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Pat Quan.
Jerry Severson, ADA.
Joe Beadle, Northrim, and Alaska Bankers Association.
Carson Rogers, ADA.
Bill Phelan, ADA.
Jerry Judea, Law.
Dean Terrio, ADA.
Bryn Kempinen, ADA. Do we have any public on the phone? Public on the phone.
This is Sheldon Fisher with the Department of Administration, just the fleet.
Any other public? Thank you.
Thanks, Brent. Next up, we have the agenda before us. Hope everybody has a chance to take a look at it, and I'll take a motion to put on the table and approval.
You'll make that motion?
Second.
Any discussions, additions? John, everything? Very good.
Yes, sir.
All right. Any objections to adopting the agenda? Hearing none? The agenda is approved. Next up is public comments. And so those that would like to comment, I'd like to ask you to limit to 3 minutes. For the record, like your name and affiliation. First, I'll go online. Is there anybody online wishing to make a public comment at today's board meeting? Anybody online? Hearing no one online. Anybody in the boardroom? Beadle? Welcome.
Sure. I'll send Mr. Beadle's after
they hand this
out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joe Beadle. I'm President and CEO and Chairman of the Board of Northrim Bancorp. I'm also authorized to represent the Alaska Bankers Association. Steve Lundgren, its president, is on travel status today. I would like to refer to what will come up on your slideshow later today as slide number 6 that talks about your business, and specifically one of the sections allows you to do refinancing, and I want to address that refinancing both on behalf of Northrim Bank and the Alaska Bankers Association. Excuse me for the notes. ADA, like Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, is a critical institutional financing. Provides critical institutional financing infrastructure and conduit and access to debt capital markets for community banks. Generally speaking, commercial banks, community banks, do not lend long-term fixed rates, and yet that's what the borrowers desire. We look more to sell or service or participate those kind of loans. We look to hedge for long-term rate exposure. Our asset liability committees have to keep balance. That's the reason S&Ls went out of business in about 1986-87. So we will sell, participate, service, and retain the other account relationships with the customers, including working capital and other needs that the customers have. Our vehicles to insulate from interest rate swings include hedges, specifically interest rate swaps. KeyBank, Wells Fargo, Northrim regularly do those. Not all community banks do those. That allows us to keep a variable interest rate, and the hedge or the swap allows the customer to fix an interest rate for a fee. And that protects the borrower from swings in interest rates. Otherwise, we can match funds through the Federal Home Loan Bank, and through someone if they say, we'll pledge a long-term certificate of deposit or something with you, and then we match fund that pricing. AHFC and ADA can access the efficient debt markets. You can sell bonds and then fill the bucket of the bonds, of the funds that you've raised. You can use your own working capital to book a bunch of loans and then pool those and then pledge those loans to the secondary market as bond collateral. Typically, you can do it with general obligation of your own organization with recourse. That gives you the lowest rate that you can pass on. Otherwise, you can do credit enhancements for partial recourse. And otherwise, you can buy credit enhancements. Some assumed moral obligation goes to ADA when they issue something, and therefore your underwriters, your professional staff need to write things in such a way that it's protected. Some of you are aware that AHFC was the conduit for the tobacco settlement for the state of Alaska, and those bonds, as an example, were issued without recourse. So just like Puerto Rico today, the United States does not have an obligation to support those bondholders, and those bonds are of course, troubled. Anyway, it's all subject to the risk rate and return and the premium. If you're issuing a general obligation, obviously you're going to get your lowest rate, and you can decide how to pass that on and keep your margin or arbitrage. So the free cash flow backs the bonds in terms of you or the university. When I worked there as the CFO and issued bonds or the state of Alaska, most banks don't have the opportunity, maybe outside of Wells Fargo, to do such a thing as go to the market in an efficient manner. So you have equity capital, net assets. ADA has a lot of that. You're using those capital to fund your loans. You could, of course, consider going to the market, but you wouldn't do that until you were consuming your funds. If you did go to market, of course, you'd have to use your underwriting. Banks need to stay clean with ADA on your $350, $400 million in participations with banks. Please believe that we're not putting off the credit risk. We would most likely buy those back if we got into trouble, because we need to stay available and authorized to do business with you. So your mission and your goal, economic support for the state, and you've concluded that it's jobs, and you've asked us to report when we ask you to participate how many jobs are kept or retained or enhanced. Frankly, I think you're limiting your overarching philosophy and goals by saying jobs, especially in a market and an economic cycle and swing that could be a challenge for our state. As ADA played a role, and AHFC did in the late 80s when we need you. So I would argue that the overarching goal of ADA should not be so limited. It should be about Alaska value stability and the attributes of keeping businesses strong in the community. It's not just about dividends to the state. It should be driven first by the strength, and if you've underwritten it, of course, those dividends and those earnings are going to come and you can share them with the state. You should consider refinancing. You should not limit refinancing. If you did choose to limit refinancing, please don't do so in terms of a rate or asking us as banks to hold more of the credit. You can differentiate if you choose to, but please do not consider not allowing refinancing. So AHFC allows refinancing both for multifamily and for single family. And frankly, if they didn't do single family, they'd lose their portfolio. And they need a certain amount of portfolio to stay of a certain size and stay engaged in the market. Certainly, like you, they don't allow cash extraction. Nobody can go buy a yacht with the extra cash that they're leveraged. They don't allow that. It has to go back into the buildings, or in the case of AHFC, to buy the next building if they're in banking and financing through them. The ultimate goal we have is to keep the economy strong and the employers viable and investments and the underlying strength of the economy. I believe your administrative order by the governor in the review and the RFP should reflect positively upon the refinance at the end of the day based on what I've heard and seen. Here's an issue, though. Troubled debt restructure in a bank is a technical term. If we provide terms that are more aggressive than the average market or someone else would provide, it's called a troubled debt restructure. Troubled debt restructure is treated as a non-performing asset to a bank, just like ORE, other real estate-owned foreclosed property, and stuff that's 9 days or plus past due. If you didn't anticipate and allow people to jigger, refinance, return, and then you wait until the end of the day, or the banks did, it goes into a bucket that really limits your ability to leverage your own capital, our capital at the banks. So if you do these kind of things in advance and they keep things in structure and you haven't hit the wall, so to speak, I know I'm beyond my 3 minutes, there are consequences to not allowing banks to get ready for a changing economy. And like in the late 80s, these entities, you were very... So the seven commercial banks will obviously work to preserve this opportunity to make sure that we're not trying to take advantage. We think this is a holistic solution to keep this stuff going. If you're concerned about price or term, then adjust those. We're willing to engage further given the opportunity. We apologize for trying to be so rushed in our delivery.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Some questions. So, Fred?
Mr. Chairman, may we have time for some
questions?
Mr. Beadle, thank you. I want to take advantage of your expertise here at the table. I've often gone back and forth with Chris over various aspects of our refinance portfolio. And so your two-way bullet point is that community banks, all Alaska banks, don't lend long-term at fixed rates. So my first question is why? Is that scale or is that your risk averse?
So banks can fail for two reasons. They can fail for bad credit, and they can fail because their margins go negative. The SNLs in the country, savings and loans institutions prior to the deregulation of banking, gave very long-term fixed rates. The mortgages were held on their books. The interest rates were floating, and everyone recalls when in 1982 the prime lending rate was 21.5%. And so, the problem was that you had loans of 5% and you had TCDs of 13%, and banks failed for interest rate risk. And asset liability management, assets are loans, liabilities are deposits. In your case, your liabilities would, be your cost of funds, and you want a margin. So many, many, many banks have failed through time, not just because of interest rate risk, but because of margin risk. So you make a long-term loan, and interest rates go up, which they're likely to do, then you go into a negative spread, and you lose money, and you fail.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to know, I was a new college student in 1982, and my first house had an 18.5% mortgage rate, which is like buying a house on your Visa card. I still can't believe that I signed it, but that was the environment and the boom in Wyoming. But what I want to go to, and again, I support this activity. I just want to make sure I understand it. Then, if you don't lend at long-term fixed rates, aren't you essentially transferring that risk that you just described from the private sector to the public sector, to ADA?
Okay, so we're pleased with, through the chair, excuse me, apologize. We will offer an interest rate swap so that we're a variable rate, and then there's quite a cost. And then to unbundle that cost, there's a prepayment fee significantly greater than your refinance fee, or a defeasance that's required. It's frankly impossible for many people, a changing of ownership, succession management, death, new buyer, and no one contemplates when they do a swap over 10 years that in year five something happened and they need to refinance or buy or sell, and the breakage fees are 300 basis points are impossible through what we call a defeasance. Your finance people are experts at that. So we're not afraid of taking that risk. In your case and in AHFC's case, should you yourself hedge your portfolio like our largest bank in the state, Wells Fargo, can do as the only one or the few, we're not afraid of taking that risk, but we're not the conduits. And as a community bank, we're probably your most engaged entrepreneurial, but we don't have the same access to the capital markets that you and your net worth and AHFC's does. So it is true that we are looking to participate that, and then we would hope in your long-term goals that you do maximize your hedge, your ability to borrow against, and that you match price it with the cost of your bonds, as AHFC does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just want to express my appreciation for having such a distinguished industry leader, banking industry leader at the table with us today. Thank you for taking the time, and I really appreciate all your comments.
So, Joe, I have a question for you. So, is it true that the banks, that the loans are short-term, but they service the entire length of the loan, or does that... Does when a bank comes out of the loan, say a 7-year loan and it's a 20-year loan with the ADA contingent, does the bank continue to service it after the bank has pulled its money out?
That is a correct statement.
Okay.
So
there, you do incur a downstream cost.
We're paid a reasonable fee for servicing costs for the loan. If there's extraordinary fees, we have the right to recover them. But we are exposed, and it would put us in the bucket of falling below a servicing performance if one of our loans went delinquent, and we would then fall out of a right to participate in future loans for ADA. So we're pretty motivated to keep it strong.
I've got one more. Go ahead, Craig.
No, you go.
So are you seeing we finally had, with the Fed, a small movement in interest rates, and I guess it's anticipated there may be another movement in interest rates. Do you see more folks coming into your facility looking for different solutions long-term because of the premise that's anticipated that long-term rates are going to go up? Short-term rates are going up?
The short answer is absolutely. We are at all-time lows for interest rates in the United States, and in some cases in foreign countries, they're negative interest rates. The cost of the government is negative. So it really doesn't have any way to go down. It is going to go up. We anticipate that to go up. The stimulus, what we call monetary stimulus of the federal government, the Federal Reserve, now that we appear to be some inflation and some growth in GDP, they will institute higher interest rates so that then they have a tool, the lowering of interest rates, to as a monetary policy to encourage economic growth in the country. So, yes, and you know, I've been wrong for now almost 20 years that interest rates have gone down. I was anticipating that they would not continue to go down. And of course, our country and our challenges have created this need for our fiscal and monetary policies to incent growth in the economy. But that incentive, including quantitative easing, is really worn out. It's not working anymore. And so eventually, our economy in the United States is doing okay, the global economy. Anybody's bet what the Federal Reserve will do. I've been wrong for a long time.
So based on percentage basis on the commercial finance side, new construction versus refinance, what are you seeing in any community, I guess Alaska, around the Southern Anchorage, on the commercial side, new finance versus percentage wise, are you seeing a fair amount of shift versus refinance? From the lack of a better term, you know, is there new commercial requests steady coming in? Do you see a dip in that versus the percentage of refinance?
Universally, there is a dip, unless there's an absolute and specific need, say in healthcare or tourism or hospitality, the markets that are favorable, that there is an absolute across the board to all banks drop in new construction. Those that travel around the country, you see the cranes all over, you don't see cranes here. What construction is occurring is for some retail that has a national scheme of having a place, a footprint in every state. Other than that, it is all about protecting the core. The individual business is saying, how can I gird my loins? How can I be prepared? How can I shift my balance sheet to survive a potentially challenging time? And one of the ways they do that is to refinance. And those tend to be the best people to finance because they're in advance and they're looking at their business model and they're saying, I can survive and maybe consolidate with other business. And refinancing is a major component of that, and that is not a bad word. As long as as long as it's not transferring risk to us as the lead lender and the ADA, and we're just as concerned about that as you are.
Fred?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Beadle, one more question. So, in general, in my discussions with Kevin Anselm, our director of the Division of Banking and Securities, I have a sense that Alaska is underbanked. And in your reference to Wells Fargo, I took from your comment that Wells Fargo is the only bank with sufficient scale to access bonds or capital in order to supplant or supply their own capital in the context of refinancing. Did I understand you properly?
Through the chair, Commissioner. Kevin is the debt manager for the state of Alaska. So anything that the municipal bond bank or any entity of the state does for debt has to kind of be signed off. They also are the ones that take the stuff to the market. So, I'm sorry, it's two different people.
Yes.
Director
Anselm is the head of Banking and Securities.
Banking and Securities, and then the debt manager. My apologies, Commissioner.
We're good.
So now back to that could be an opinion that she holds. There's always been national financing occur in the state of Alaska. I call them in many cases carpetbaggers, because they will be here to take the best,
the high side,
and offer it at the lowest rate with the least risk, and frankly challenge Alaska banks to do well. It is true that in terms of, so they're always available, and they tend to get the best, and they tend to bank our native corporations in leadership roles. And they do well with that. So your community banks, it is true of the community banks, Key, if you want to call them a community bank, Wells Fargo, do have the access. I indicated that we do as well through our correspondent banks for this swap instrument. And many of them will actually hedge an entire portfolio. But there's cost to that. And in many cases, your customers and our customers are very upset when they come in and say, what's my breakage fee? And that'll be $250,000, sir, if you want out of this, or you can defease it, and we can define that if we needed to. But it is impossible for, and they hadn't advised the customer that this breakage fee would debilitate the entire company and in essence eliminate them. As a community bank, you don't sell something that you don't live with 5 years from now. And the community and the national banks tend to do that. Their fees are huge for getting these kind of hedges.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to leave and make sure that I didn't misconstrue Director Anselm's comments. It's just the general thought that Alaska is underbanked and much of Alaska, rural Alaska, etc. It's not whether it's community or national banks. She's actually quite interested in the vitality and improvement in our state-based banks.
I can't help myself to say that the CRA, Community Reinvestment Act, rankings of Alaska banks are some of the best in the country.
Yes.
The ratings of Alaska banks, as judged by the insurance rates that we pay, are the best in the country. If someone wants to come in and establish a bank, I'm sure the director would encourage charter to be issued. It is really tough in the margins of banking, and especially in this state, to make money as a bank. It's
like
fraud with
risk. Mr. Chairman, one follow-up, and I know we need to let this go. So when you say that, though, is the banking industry's ranking in that regard under pressure as the state economy contracts?
It absolutely will be. An instance, we're the only publicly traded SEC-registered bank in the state of Alaska. Northrend Bank. There's only two other SEC registered companies headquartered in Alaska, GCI and ACS. If you look at our stock price as opposed to our performance for earnings and book value, our stock performance is down. And why is that? It's a reflection on doing business in one area code, 907. if you're going to go to the market and try to raise money and start a bank in Alaska, you don't need to go any further than look at our own stock price. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Gary?
Thank you. Joe, thank you for being here today. And I want to ask you to talk about 4D on your punch sheet. But, you know, this sort of flared up a month ago when we had four refinances here, and then we had some inquiries from the other group, which has brought us to where we are today. And so you being here, your presence here kind of, it tells me that this has some import, and we need to do something to make sure that the seven of us understand that. I don't understand much of what you said. There are people at this table that do, and I'm going to rely on them. So having said that, would you just talk about 4D, linear attribute? What does that mean?
I could use the word anal, but... So the concept of drawing from the cash flow of a company, so most of the stuff that you do is commercial real estate, and the valuation of a piece of commercial real estate is really on the ability of it, its earning capacity, and we call that NOI, net operating income. Net operating income is on the business. And there's a factor that's applied to that. It's called the cap rate. And the cap rate is really a placeholder for long-term return without capital appreciation. In the lower 48, the cap rate on commercial real estate is all the way down to 3.5% and 4%. That really means that the people are investing and thinking they're only going to get 3.5% or 4%. It's a travesty, in my opinion, for it being that low. In Alaska, we're seeing 6, 7, 8% because our factor in Alaska is a higher risk. Even the federal government lease today, certainly a state lease wouldn't get it because you know, subject to appropriation. the issue with the trickle-down, the linear, is that it all goes to net operating income. And net operating income, oftentimes, one of the biggest factors is your cost of interest carrying on that building. And so, and then it's the cap rate. And you can't control the cap rate because it's an evaluation of risk in our market. You can control the payments you make based on amortization. The longer, the less is the cash flow. And the lower the interest rate, then the better the NOI. And so the valuation on a property is directly linked to the available financing. When we take away financing, which occurred in the late 80s, then it wasn't simply about leasing the property per square foot. It was because the charge, the premium for an interest rate to cover that risk went up and the NOI went down. And the cap rate went up. And it's really a tripling effect. And so by offering reasonable terms, not sacrificing the credit risk of ADA or the bank, you've improved the NOI, and you've shown that the market, as judged by institutions like ADA, deserves a reasonable cap rate. Right now we're double in Alaska what the lower 48 is. Okay, so if you weren't available, the cap rate's going to go higher, the NOI is going to go lower, and the valuation is worse. And it's a tidy bowl commercial. You're flushing the toilet, and every year it goes, and every turn it goes down and down and down, and you don't have a stop to a devastating price environment, appraisal environment on the market. So the linear effect to me is if a business can refinance and consolidate and take on other business and fill people in and offer them lower rent rates, then everybody wins. The employer stays employed, the building stays strong, we don't have the tidy bowl commercial, and we keep our economy relatively strong. And really, ADA is one of the few tools, as is AHFC. When everyone else stopped doing mortgages in the middle and late 80s, AHFC and ADA provided, really, is the valley of death. And it was really keeping Alaska with a future that said there's somebody there for a stopgap.
Thank you. That helps.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So one last question for me, Bill, is besides HFC and ADA, the community banks, do they have other alternatives at a price point that's similar to what HFC and ADA offers on your long-term commercial loans?
Yes, under certain circumstances. So we finance quite a bit in low-income housing and Cook Inlet housing, but there's many regional and Native Corporation housing out there, in this case, Seahawk, Cook Inlet Housing. So we went to the Federal Home Loan Bank, who we're a member of, and we borrowed it at 2.5% for 25 years. And it was a CIP, a community investment project, where they allowed the bank to borrow. So it's a debt by the bank, and then 25-year amortizing loan, 2.5%, and then we added a margin above that to extend to them, and they got tax credits, and they got AHFC, and they got NASA, which is Native Housing, and they got our credit, and then they got some conventional credits, kind of a rainbow of financing. So the answer is yes, but we're then showing it as a borrowing on our books, and so we're limited to the capacity for how much of that we can do. And we do it for reasons like Community Reinvestment Act, to show that we're supporting things like housing, that outside lenders don't have to do, that credit unions don't have to do, and credit unions don't pay taxes, and there's no benefit for credit unions to do a tax exempt or tax exempt financing or tax credit. So I get sensitive when we talk about being underbanked and the credit unions that pay no taxes benefit, period, over commercial banks, and outside banks come in and take the cream.
All right. Any more questions for Mr. Beadle? Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your time and
I apologize for my emotions, but I really appreciate your acceptance of that.
Thank you.
We have your number.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else from the public in the boardroom with you to testify? Hearing none, I'll close public comments. And before the board is our prior minutes. I'll take a motion to put them on the table for the discussion.
I move to our 31st.
Thank you. All right, has everybody had a chance to review the minutes? Any corrections? Any objections? Seeing none, the prior minutes are adopted. New business, ADA statutes, regulations, policies related to financing. John?
Thank you, Chair. And we understood from the board that the board wanted to have a conversation around ADA's programs and financing tools. And we thought that the best way to set up this discussion with public in the room was to first start with our commercial finance program and then walk through how that program works and make sure that the public understands clearly. And then move into a compare and contrast with our other ADA programs and tools to use that as a bridge to a discussion on the topic.
All right.
And so first we would like to have Chris Anderson come up and call on anyone else who would like to.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
I'm happy on the drive.
How do you
drive? Oh, yeah, I can drive.
Well, it's a different mouth than I'm used to, but that's okay. I just drive and learn.
And you do all these on me.
Okay, so most of you know the general parameters of the loan participation program, so we're going to be brief in this. The loan participation program provides long-term commercial financing to Alaska businesses, as we've indicated.
Chris?
Yes.
For Gary's sake, could you speak up?
Gary didn't bring his hearing.
There we go.
What is it up, Chris?
Never mind. Okay. We can, ADA can participate up to 90% of a loan originated by an eligible commercial lender that we have a executed seller servicer agreement with, and not to exceed $25 million. That's our cap, our current cap. The terms in regards to financing personal property are 15 years and for real estate 25 years. Our maximum loan to value is 75%. We have access to both fixed and variable rates. The fixed rate right now is 3.84% and our variable is 5.06%. And the program has supported the creation of approximately 5,000 construction jobs and 6,000 permanent jobs over time.
Fred?
Mr. Chairman, so just I assume that those limits are set by ADA, particularly the $25 million rather than statutory?
The $25 million is a statutory number. Above that amount, we take an act of the legislature.
Right.
Then going down to the 75% loan to value, that is I don't know if you want to call it a gold standard.
It's an underwriting standard.
Yes.
It's fairly common in the industry.
And it's solid. But my question is, I noticed that Mr. Beadle said in his 0.25 that ADA was under-leveraged in how we use capital. I don't know that that relates to this value. But my question is, if we assess, is 75 the right number? Should that be 70? Should it be 80? What should it be headed into the downturn? Or is it just a standard industry practice?
I think it's fairly standard. And I'm comfortable with 70% loan to value currently. I mean, we haven't, at least from the functional standpoint, we haven't seen dips. I mean, I know what the general economy is saying, but I guess what I'm saying is we haven't seen any negative impact that would precipitate.
My fear is, of course, failure to anticipate.
Right. But
my only question was, that's our operating parameter, but what is there room to maneuver there in terms of fine-tuning how we approach things? I don't have any more solid idea than I'm asking you the question. I'm wondering what you think.
Well, I think that currently that across the board with the lenders that we deal with, that is what is given to us, is a 75% loan value. And if we are not comfortable with something in the underwriting, for instance, if we think perhaps the appraiser has been a little bit aggressive in their evaluation, we can lower that percentage. But we typically would not raise it.
Thank you.
So Chris, based on that, when you mentioned the word appraiser, mm-hmm. So the bank is actually went out for the appraisal.
It was contracted with the bank, yes.
And you're using that appraisal, yes. For your analysis.
Yes.
Have you ever gone back to the bank and asked for a second appraisal or questioned the appraisal number?
Yes. Not usually for a second appraisal, but we have gone back and said that we would like it formally reviewed, which it's usually reviewed by another in
And typically, though, the appraiser picks whether it's replacement value, comp sales, or whatever on a construction loan, on a new construction. You know, obviously you can't use the business. So are you all right with those basically three options the appraiser uses?
Right. They do have the three options, and we do read the appraisal. I mean, we read the whole analysis, and we determine whether we can come to the same conclusion as that appraisal.
All right.
And his or her reason for coming to that valuation conclusion.
Do you have the ability to go to a I would call it ADA consultant that's familiar with the particular marketplace that you're doing business in to get a second opinion with a fairly quick concern?
We definitely have the ability to go to others. I'm not sure what you mean by
someone that's already pre-approved, that you go to them and say, hey, here's an appraisal. We've got to take a look at this. What do you think? Without spending months.
Right. But there's a cost associated
with
that.
Kind of in-house reviewer, but off-balance sheet as far as employees.
Yeah, there's a cost associated with that. And it's because the contract is between the appraiser and the bank, we go back through the bank to have that done.
So it's really not independent. It's really not an independent look at the appraisal. because you're going through someone that's sponsoring the loan.
You are going through someone who's sponsoring the loan. However, the person who would be hired to do that usually does it as a living. You don't always have appraisers reviewing other appraisers' work because it's a fairly small market, and they don't like to, you know, criticize each other's work. So there are some appraisers, some MAI appraisers, who just do review work. That's what they do. And, you know, that's typically who we go through. And there aren't very many of them in the local market. This is put in a graph as to our general process, and I can walk through this if you'd like. It tries to capture the process that we go through on loans. And so, as you start off at the upper left, typically a borrower, a client, comes into the bank with a concept of what they want to do in financing a piece of commercial real estate. Oftentimes, and I'm just going to follow the arrows here, oftentimes the lender will contact us, we'll discuss it. The next step typically would be that they put a brief light together, which is just a simple one-page form to us, giving us the concept of the deal. And we determine whether that transaction has any issues from either a regulatory or a statutory perspective, or if we have an opinion at that point of any underwriting concerns. Assuming that we go forward with it at that stage, the lender then starts putting together the actual credit package. They obtain the appraisal, the credit information, all the documentation that's specific to the transaction, and then they go through their own internal approval process. At that point, assuming again approval, then it comes to ADA. We independently underwrite the credit.
So Chris, what this tells me is that the bank comes to you, and you have a 20,000 foot discussion, but then it says here you determine actually the participation level before the lender provides you the credit package. Is that right?
You mean the split between the two of them?
Yes.
Usually they have an idea of mind of what they want to do at that stage.
Well, yeah, but it says ADA participation level. So you are at the 20,000 foot level.
Yeah.
Agreeing to a participation level before you see a package. Is that? I just want to make sure I understand that that's what you do.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever changed that participation level after you've seen
the
loan package?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we have the ability to do that.
All right.
So then when the package has been submitted to us, we underwrite, actual credit presentation is originated, the loan officers and myself discuss it. Recommendations are made, and at that point, it goes to approval for at the loan committee level. Anything over $3 million, as you know, or $5 million collectively with related debt, would also go for board approval. And again, assuming approval at that stage, then a commitment letter is issued to the lender. The lender then goes forward and prepares the loan documents for signature. ADA then, as a courtesy, reviews those documents so that we can give input as to anything that ADA may specifically require. Then the lender closes the loan, executes the documents, and once the documents are executed, we again review to be sure that there's, you know, been nothing that has changed, because we are actually going to be putting money at the door again. So we do a secondary review, assuming that there are no issues there. ADA then reimburses the lender. They reimburse the lender for the percentage of the credit that we've agreed to do. So that's the general process that we go through with everyone.
What does it typically cost your department to start from looking at a proposed participation loan to the execution of the funds to the lending bank. Is there a typical number, or is it based on individual complexity of the deal?
Complexity of the deal will certainly factor in. I'm not aware that we've actually put a number to our time. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
To the time that's been spent? To my knowledge, we haven't tried to put a number to that. Deals can be fairly unique. Some of them are fairly, you know, straightforward, simple. And some are quite complex.
So is there a fee that Ada charges to help compensate?
1% fee. Okay. Of Ada's loan participation.
So if you add everything up that you do on a yearly basis and the loans you put in, is that 1% covering your cost for that department that does that?
I would say yes. Michael, I don't know if you have any input. Yeah, I would think it would.
All right.
And I guess what I would add to this is by virtue of this program, we have an extended reach that we wouldn't otherwise have to Alaska businesses. Being able to leverage the abilities of our commercial banks and credit unions who have these one-to-one relationships, doing that daily contact with their borrower, and as in this kind of a program, to duplicate that in-house would be A, expensive, and B, would be kind of directly competitive, government versus industry. So this program, rides the balance.
Okay,
this pie chart is our loan participation diversification by region. It is fairly diversified throughout the state. You can see that Anchorage has the majority percentage, but that's driven for the most part by demographics. Your demographics are also in Anchorage. But we obviously take in applications throughout the state. And this pie chart shows our loan balance. I believe these numbers are as of March 31st. And this gives the diversification of our loans by industry. To point out a couple of things here, on the oil and gas support, we kind of created a piece for that when we underwrote the Dead Horse Man Camp, and that's what that's referring to. The wastewater, again, is just one loan, and that's your Valley Utilities for the prison out in Wasilla. And fuel distribution, again, is one loan, and that's the Bonanza fuel storage in Bethel.
Are you seeing any pressure by industry as far as the economy putting the pressure on the, for instance, retail or equipment or office or tourism? Plus or minuses?
I would say that retail and tourism right now, just generally speaking, are the most active, and healthcare.
Mr. Chairman? I appreciate this data very much, both these slides. We see them every board meeting. I just am curious to provoke thinking is, who are we missing, either regionally or by sector? Do we have outreach? I'm curious. We must have return customers, people that understand our processes, have used it, come back in the door, and then we must have places in the economy that are less familiar with us, and there's some sort of knowledge barrier to entry. Do we actually have active outreach, or should we, or how's that ebb and flow over time?
I'll volunteer. When I stepped into this role, and I looked at how our portfolio was deployed, and I made visits to areas where we didn't have as much participation. So getting out to Bethel, to Dillingham, to Nome, to Kodiak, just to see what kind of activity that there is. And I found that A, there's the role of informing the community about the tools that I have available. But then we have this approach of cash and collateral versus subsistence-based economies, which are a very different kind of an approach to how do you get something done under commercial terms and conditions that are accountable by a commercial bank. So it's an interesting balancing act and work out in rural Alaska.
The couple things that stand out to me, and having nothing to do with the risk, is communications and transportation. This is not on here.
We determine these by what's called a NAFIC code, and it's a national division of types of lending, and the book is that thick. I mean, there are thousands of codes, and so we try to keep it as compact as we can and descriptive as we can when we book these.
Yeah. And then I have reached out regarding the communications part to different companies, and the response is generally, we got plenty of capital, we can get good rates, we don't really need you. If we do, we're happy to come and contact you. And then regarding transportation, where you have all the federal dollars in place, I think that's where we ride the line. What is DOT's purview? What is our purview? What type of dollars are being put towards this? We can put dollars towards private infrastructure for transportation. We have other areas where we participate, like the FedEx maintenance hangar.
Or would that be under transportation, or what would you call FedEx?
Oh, and then
warehouse.
And then it's not in this view.
Yeah, I understand. Right. Yeah. But if someone came in for hangars, I see office warehouse. I see hangar terminal. Is that what?
Mm-hmm, yeah, and hangar terminal.
Hangar.
Yeah.
And if I could add to Chris's question, we also on an annual basis participate in a panel discussion with other entities such as HSC, Evergreen, SBA. ADA is part of it, and we give our little dog and pony show on what ADA is about to lenders, primarily new lenders, because the lenders who've been around a while know us. But we do that on an annual basis.
And then this next slide is actually verbatim from existing ADA regulation. So we just wanted to provide a copy for everybody. Sure.
Okay. Well, as the first bullet says, the authority may participate in a loan made by an originator to refinance an outstanding loan. And by originator, we mean a seller servicer. We have signed contracts with most. Well, I think actually almost all of your lenders were commercial banks and credit unions in the state. So the borrower receives an economic benefit from refinancing. Joe indicated some of this: the interest rate reduction, a reduction of debt service payments, an extension of the maturity of the loan, the elimination of a call or balloon payment provisions, or there could be other economic benefits, which may include improvements in the energy efficiency of an existing building, improvement, or structure. So that is part of our regulation.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to go in Mr. Beadle's presentation in 3A. He's arguing that the ultimate goal is not simply jobs. So we have here the authority may participate, then we have the borrower receives, and then if you had a third bullet point, it would say that the authority or the state of Alaska receives economic benefits, and they include our earnings, dividends, jobs. And there may be other attributes we should try to describe there. I was trying to think of turnover or the volume of economic activity generated. I was going to his thought that our mission is really financial and economic strength. It's broader than a jobs definition. I don't want to chase numbers that are, we all have our concerns with the job numbers being soft or more difficult to track than you might think. But I was wondering about trying to find a metric that was
kind of like a certainty, long-term certainty.
Yeah, it's just an idea.
Yeah.
And sustainability and resilience were a couple of the words that I have heard folks use, that ADA, through its programs, provides resilience to Alaska businesses and sustainable financing. So especially in the times that we are in, to keep the economy as healthy as possible.
Gary?
Thank you. Two things. So, do we have a, in our available, in our assets, our cash, so to speak, do we have a certain amount that we can refinance up to a certain point and then we can't refinance anymore? Or could we use up all of our cash to refinance if we had a flurry?
I don't think we divide it out that way, because what we do, you know, if it's a buy-sell transaction or you're turning out construction or you're refinancing, those kind of requests are reflective of what the market is doing. You know, it's what's out there. And if, you know, as Mr. Beagle said, you know, there's not a lot of construction going on, you know, right now we're in a cycle of refinancing. You know, it may not stay that way. But it has, oh, yeah, okay. So it may become more economic in the future that it pays to actually, you know, that the lease rates will justify the actual construction of a project. Right now, that's not really the case, but that could change in the future. And when construction starts to become more active, they're going to be turning out more construction projects than doing refinancing. So we don't try to artificially divide that up.
Do you divide it up by risk? Sorry.
No way.
I mean, do you risk allocation of only so much of the portfolio goes into a certain bucket for a certain type of industry?
For a certain kind of industry?
For instance,
you know,
right now you have 23% in office.
Right.
If you had 85% in office, would you say that would be...
Oh, yeah. No, we always pay attention to that. The only time that, since I've been here, and actually it happened, I think, right before I came here, was that they put a moratorium on hotel financing, because we were getting almost all of the requests for all the hotels that were happening, and hotel financing was very active. And we had almost a quarter of our portfolio in hotel financing, which, you know, started, you know, then we did a feasibility analysis on that. You know, we did a third party, you know, canvassing of the market. And then also...
Well, now you don't have any.
It absorbed.
Yeah, well, I don't see hotels on you at all.
Oh, tourism. Hotels are under tourism.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's see, I lost my train of thought.
I think, Mr. Beadle had mentioned, in terms of capacity, if we got to the point where we didn't have in-house capacity, then we could bundle together a package of our loans and bond against those to be able to take cash, to be able to have in-house cash. So we have some options that maybe aren't viable for an Alaska commercial bank, something that a Wells Fargo could do, but something that we could do if we got to the point where we were capacity constrained.
So in our capacity model, we don't have a segment that is labeled refinance funds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Second question then. Do we then, we don't have the ability to, if we refinance, we don't have the ability to direct or influence where the proceeds of that refinance are applied once it leaves our control.
It has to be for a business purpose, and that's a regulatory. So we, you know, the bank has to certify that the proceeds from that refinance are for business purpose, because the purpose of it is not for somebody to refinance and, as we said, extract money to buy a yacht or go to Hawaii or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be, and the bank has to certify that in writing.
Okay. So the little flurry that we had after our last meeting, and names aren't important, and Ada said, no, we'd rather not participate in that. What was the, in regard to this policy, what caused that denial?
I don't know.
Which deal was that?
Well, the names aren't important. So it was the one we had a week after our last meeting, and there was question about where the monies were going to be used.
We had a request come in through for our project development program, and there was as opposed to our commercial finance program. So we can talk a little about that, I think, as we do the compare and contrast. I understand that that did come through on an initial request in the commercial finance program. But in the commercial finance program, it's pretty clear what we need in terms of coverage and collateral and guarantees. And that wasn't what the party was interested in. The party was interested in something that was not non-recourse. Okay. They were looking for something that didn't necessarily have a guarantee.
So that's up in this segment of ADA on your...
Yeah.
Yes.
That's where that... Oh, okay, so that was... Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Fred, did you have something to follow up or?
I did, but I lost track of it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I could make just one other comment and go back to that hotel example, because I wanted to add the fact that because we were at almost a quarter of our portfolio in hotels, we also took a next step and contracted out to canvas other economic development companies in the country to see what their limits were. And because it's a little bit different than a bank. I mean, in a bank, if you start getting a quarter of your portfolio in a certain segment, you start backing off a little bit. But the response to that was, you're an economic development company. Until you hit about 40%, keep going.
Does it make sense that the board have a policy, some of the policy, for which industry, how much of the portfolio should be in the industry without you know, the board notification? For instance, we're at 23% in office. Mm-hmm. Would 25% be like a max, and anything more than that, that you would have, before you started the discussion about participation, you know, 25% of anything in one particular industry from a risk standpoint? I don't know if that's if banks do that or investors do that, but it would have.
They all come before us as
well.
It is.
No, only if it's over three million or 5 million acres. So you know, right now we're at 23% in office and 22% in retail, which is in, you know, almost 50% of our portfolio. Not that that's a bad thing. I don't know what the threshold should be. I would look to the experts to tell us. But John, maybe kind of research that a little bit. So if there is an industry standard, if not, if we need to, you know, we have to approach that in a different way.
Yeah, and certainly it's definitely the purview of the board in terms of having. You know, providing guidance to staff around the diversity in the portfolio and, you know, what types of boundaries we should consider. I guess the one thing is we can't diversify out of Alaska. So that's
no, but, you know, as the price of oil goes up and down, those industries fluctuate with it, right? But if the world economy or the United States economy changes, in tourism, that is going to be affected. So everything's affected. You know, we're down in certain areas, but we're up in other areas up here. And from a balance standpoint, you know, is there something we should look at, Fred?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure, other than common sense, but Chris noted on slide 5 that allocation was based on asset codes that were this thick, and you just asked about hotels. They're not on here as hotels, they're on here as tourism. I mean, what would undermine your concept is the fact that how you define it is open to this wide-ranging interpretation. Doesn't mean the concept's not right. I just wonder
how we
keep track of it.
I don't know what the vehicle would be, but just...
Think about it. Mr. Chairman, I did find my other question, and I just wanted to go back to Senator Wilkins' capacity question. So at a prior board meeting this spring, in terms of the leverage that's in our portfolio and our capacity, we actually reduced our dividend and retained earnings in anticipation of a pinch point ahead of us on our financing. Now, we don't distinguish in that capacity between the various sectors of our approach, but... we at least were feeling the impingement of that upper boundary.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, so we have included several examples of loan participations that we have done in the recent past to give you an idea. Of some of the projects that we worked on. This one was a 9-10 split with North Rim for Alaska Pacific University for energy renovations and upgrades to six buildings on their APU campus. The net result of which it gave them an annual savings of $340,000. It's one of the few credits that we actually put under energy renovations.
We can't hear you when you're facing that way.
Sorry. We'll talk to you. Okay. This next one is Brooks Camp, LLC. This is the MAM camp up in Dead Horse. 334-unit MAM camp. Again, a participation with North Rim 3070 split. This is terming out new construction for a business that services the oil patch and supported 32 to 36 new jobs on this project. The next one, and Russell, you can tell me if I'm saying this right. I believe it's Una Kau Ani. Corporation.
He's got a picture on it. He's got a picture on his phone of the first Christian shop.
So I had known Northrim was such an important customer. We had water from Mr. Beetle here.
We picked some of our more interesting. This happens a lot in our Northrim. This is obviously term financing for the IC Point Strait project in Puna. 35 new jobs. 80-20 split with Northrim. This is a destination point for the new dock, and also there were some funds used for renovating buildings and 52 construction jobs. The Aspen Hotel is one that we participated on a 50-50 basis with Alaska USA. This is a relatively new hotel. It's on Tudor, just east of C Street, on the south side of the street. It's proximate to the airport. It's designed for extended stays. And 14 jobs created, and since inception, it's been performing quite well.
So Chris, is the 50-50 a result of mitigating our exposure in the hotels, or why is this one 50-50?
They wanted to keep that much.
Okay.
It's often what the bank wants to do.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
They would have kept more if they could, I think. They liked this project.
All right.
And so they suggested a 50-50 split.
Do you ever push back, Mr. Chairman, and say, we like it, we'd like 60?
Yeah.
Sometimes we do play poker, yes. You're welcome. This next example is H2 Oasis, long-term financing on the water park, which is in South Anchorage. Again, it's the participation with Northrim. A little bit odd in the percentages, but they were dollar-based. And this was to refinance existing debt and also for equipment acquisition. 8 full-time jobs, 49 part-time winter jobs were created, and 12 full-time and 60 part-time summer jobs. And this business also has been opened and successful business since, I believe, 2008. Allen Marine in Southeast. This is long-term financing on a tour vessel, this cuff. This is a 70-30 participation with Wells Fargo. Scenic and sightseeing tours in Southeast, 12 construction jobs created, four permanent jobs, 40 seasonal jobs, and we finance this under the equipment aspect of the loan participation program.
So is that a 20-year also, or on the equipment side?
15 max, and they can do less. Depending on what kind of... Okay. This next one is Chinook, a popular restaurant in Seward on the peninsula. It was a 90-10 split with Wells Fargo. And 35 seasonal jobs, 1.5 full-time positions. And this business has also been doing quite well. So those are some of your examples. And in contrast, ADA has their project and infrastructure finance division. I believe John is going to walk us through that.
Yeah, and then this is where we wanted to shift gears a bit. And so we've had this discussion around what we do in our commercial finance division related to loan participations. And then to talk a little bit more about what we do in our project and infrastructure finance. So I just wanted to open it up with this slide about where areas best fit is and ADA involvement is for project finance and infrastructure finance projects. And it's kind of at that point of that pre-construction point. And the six major things that we're looking for are the operating experience, somebody who has done it before, can do it again, knows how to do it. The capital contribution for the piece going forward, not the sunk cost, but who's going to be our partner on a go-forward basis in getting this project done. Designs and permits, making sure that those are in place or close to being in place for the project, and signed purchase and sales agreements. For commodity-based arrangements where we're looking at mine minerals of certain types or oil or gas, then the sales agreements might not be quite as critical to the project. But when we're talking about other types of products or services, we want to make sure that those are in place for funding the project, at least some anchor buyers. And we're not really in the business of if you build it, they will come.
So those anchor buyers, do you do a diligence on them and on their credit worthiness?
Yes. Yeah. And we need to clearly understand who the counterparties are there for us on the contract. Who's the buyer? The same thing with the financier. Who is on the other side of the financing that's providing capital? And those are all critical parts of moving a project forward. And then I'd ask Jim Hemsath and Mark Davis to come up if they wanted to provide some comment as we walk through just some examples of our projects.
Chris, you're not heavy enough to lift the chair.
What do you want to do? Starting with the, I just wanted to go over four projects that represent four different kinds of financing that we've done, from the development finance, which is now the project development basis, starting off with DMTS. DMTS, a very long term. Actually, we have a 50-year lease on the land, but a 40-year term on the agreement with Tech Well, that where they will pay us a tonnage fee and a variety of other different fees. Our net interest on this was 6.39% interest over a 40-year term. At the time of this, actually, that interest rate was a little bit lower than some of the bond rates that were in place, but it was an aspect of significant job creation with a relatively large company to guarantee the payments on the tonnage, although at the time, Cameco did not have the funds, the wherewithal they could do the mine, they could do the mill, but they couldn't get to the tidewater, as it were. So Ada's perspective, our Ada's participation in this was owning the road and the port, and this is actually a true ownership. And while our contract goes, the existing contract as it's written, the operating agreement, is 2041, post-2041, if there is, in fact, a operating mine, we go to a straight tonnage basis only versus minimums and guarantees. But this account had a minimum basis for payment. It had uplifts on tonnage. It had a zinc escalator where we'd get a portion of that. We'd get a benefit for high prices of zinc. We established a reserve account. Once the reserve account was full, where those funds went in to fill the reserve account were split between Ada and Tech at some point. Another part of my coming here, there's an agreement with Tech to help finance Northwest Arctic Borough schools. We allowed that to happen as part of participating in that to happen. Ada took a longer viewpoint on when we would receive funds from the reserve account, and I think it was a 5-year delay in what we received. So it's an example of true ownership with a return based on what we felt the mine life was at the time, which was very long, but driven in part by mission needs of job creation. And that's one of the things that we talk about at Red Dog are the 500 to 600 jobs that direct jobs at the mine and the port. Similar but a little bit different is the project we just completed with actually DMVA, the state of Alaska, and their tenant, the Coast Guard, on expanding the Camp Denali Readiness Center to accommodate the Coast Guard. Coast Guard at the time was being, oh, evicted is such a strong word, but the Peterson Tower had tenants that would pay a little bit more than what the Coast Guard wanted to pay. Coast Guard actually was scattered a little bit in terms of where they were in the city. But consolidating here and consolidating their operations here and their operations center on base with the National Guard, this is a lot of fun to watch. I mean, backwards. That's why I'm staring at Dana as opposed to the screen, otherwise I'd start to stutter. Don't get too excited about the next slide. But this was, a relatively modest return on our loan, 7% over 30 years. And a 30-year term was set by the Coast Guard in terms of what they were allowed to pay. Was a very unusual bit of discussion going on before we talked about when before funds released, which included approval by the municipality of Anchorage that we could actually build there, approval by Homeland Security that they would want to lease there, approval by the Department of Defense that we could actually be on base, and there was some snarling going on between the Coast Guard and the Air Force, which had just taken over the operation of Jerry Bear on this. Literally delayed us about 2.5 months before the approval finally came in, which at that point we executed funding and moved on the contract. This was a direct construction by ADA. The construction was managed by ADA in participation with the Coast Guard as a customer. It was built for purpose, and DMVA guarantees our payments over this term. So long-term, relatively modest, but well-guaranteed, not in collateral, but in payments from the state of Alaska, and served a specific mission purpose of not just the Coast Guard jobs being retained in Alaska as part of District Anchorage, but also it sets the Coast Guard up to be able to have a much broader role in the state, which is important in terms of crews and other things as waters in the up north open up and they have more cruise ships. So it created a bigger mission for the Coast Guard. So it was that was some of the considerations that were in place. Completely different then was...
Jim, real quickly?
Yes, sir.
I just can't resist. Is this all subject to appropriation, too?
Yes.
Yes. The federal contract says it's subject to appropriation.
No, that's not it, Mark. That's actually incorrect. We have a 10-year lease with the Coast Guard. Every 10-year lease with the Coast Guard has to be approved by Congress. That lease is good. The fact that DMVA is guaranteeing the payment is subject to appropriation.
Okay. So the guarantee has to be...
Yes.
Well, but the rest of the Coast Guard might not
know. No, but those are within those 10-year periods. Those are not subject.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Coast Guard. Big,
well, this turns out to be a good deal for the Coast Guard missions there. So moving from a little bit more into a more commercial-driven, but I would say also infrastructure project was the jack-up rig. There had been some discussion prior to in concept with previous boards on this about can we and should we assist in getting a jack-up rig in Cook Inlet. This is the same time that the legislature was putting incentives in place. This is at the time when we had our red light, green light, yellow light in Anchorage. We were going to run out of natural gas. A lot of pieces were there. Not Brooks Range. The next.
Buccaneer,
thank you. Too many bees. That's another bee project. Actually, Brooks Range is the next. Bluegrass. Buccaneer came to ADA with the request originally in terms of discussion of being part of the consortium. Over time, the project evolved into creating of an LLC, KOV LLC, that would own the rig and lease it to Buccaneer Exploration or Buccaneer Drilling, who had the leases. That LLC was composed of ADA as a senior member, Buccaneer, and Ezion Holdings as the two subordinate members. ADA on the, what was at the time, estimated $89 million rig had a $25 million portion, including funds that would be used for transportation. The deal was a little better than 7%. We were looking at 8% at that point. A bump coming from one of the reimbursement agreements from the state, with the collateral being in the rig and Ada taking a mezzanine position behind the Overseas China Bank Corporation in terms of being paid. Now, the Overseas China Bank Corporation was into this project 60-some-odd million dollars. Actually, the number doesn't leave me right now, but in that ballpark.
15.
It went up, though. So the funds there, the loan was guaranteed by ESEAN, who brought their bank in. We had the second position after the bank on the collateral with the ability to buy the bank out in case of an inability to make payments or things didn't work out. We also had guarantees on the part of ESEAN, which is a much stronger financial partner going into this for the rig. So as we're familiar with the story, the rig came, it explored, it left, as did Buccaneer in that regard too. But during the process of that, we had established a very elaborate set of conditions and guarantees and collaterals and payments that at the end of the day, Ada was paid back in full. We netted approximately $5 million in a three-year period on the financing this, as ASEAN fulfilled their part as the junior partner to buy Ada out, and they moved that rig to where there was other leases. And then finally, with the last project, which is trucks upon trucks are coursing the highways to Tacoma to be loaded up on barges and shipped here, is the Blue Crest drill loan, which is a full project financing in name and intent. The project with Buccaneer was preferred ownership with defined payment terms and defined interest, but was not classified as a loan because we didn't have the statutory powers to have a loan at the time. So in this particular case, we made a direct loan to Blue Crest, 8.5% net overall royalties, establishment of reserve accounts for our perspective, approximately 100 jobs for ongoing rig operations, as well as the operations and production facility is there. We estimated in our due diligence that royalties and other tax revenues would be in excess of $200 million from the state and the Kenai Borough. The oil that the rig will be drilling for, but is currently being processed in the production facility in the last month, is estimated to top out at 10,000 barrels a day of production, and Tesoro is the beneficiary of that. So it's a local oil production for Tesoro, and it basically displaces the oil that they're importing to the state with locally produced oil. And as I mentioned, the rig is complete in its fabrication. It is en route to Kenai. Assembly should be complete and should be operating June timeframe. And the production facility of that Blue Crest is built, is in place, and is in fact operating out of the one well that was part of the lease agreement they had, the Hanson One well, and it's producing a relatively modest amount of oil. They've moved from that by now something in excess of 10,000 barrels by truck and total down to Tesoro. So the system is in place and it's operating. So that sort of covers the gamut of looking at the financing as it relates to what the project can handle. Is that helping me?
I'm not sure where you're going.
we try to match the project financing to the project itself so that the revenues, our goal is to make the project a success because that's revenue and that's mission accomplishment. And each of these have had a different approach from the long term of tech patient capital, including aspects in the early years where payments were not being made because the production wasn't happening, to risks of tech solvency, actually, even a few years back, before they had a major infusion of Chinese cash in 2009, to Blue Crest, very, very well financed, coming in fairly straightforward, identified prospects, local market that's close to it. So that sort of covered the gamut. I really wanted to just sort of show that demonstration as a, in contrast to what the commercial financing is. Right.
And so Jim had talked to a number of points that are related to the mission in terms of job creation and development and economic development in the state, and doing that for the state in terms of royalty revenues. But then to bring it kind of back home with discussions that have been had in this room, where, you know, we're serving 735,000 shareholders, our population of the state of Alaska, and we hold their interest in mind. And we're balancing how we work with a project developer and we work with the borrower and providing benefits through those types of programs, but then also making sure that our 735,000 shareholders are made whole, and that ADA continues to increase its ability to you know, provide financing for these projects. So a lot of different pieces and parts moving, in addition to providing a dividend back to the state that can be deployed by our legislature and our administration. So you know, with all these moving parts and pieces, I wanted to just move this to talk about kind of a comparison of our commercial finance, which has a fairly hard and fast set of rules, versus our project development, infrastructure development, which are, you know, have kind of guideposts as we're working through, and then also solicit the board for direction in terms of, you know, moving these programs forward. So whereas in, you know, we'll talk about the three parts, three main levers from a financial evaluation criteria perspective of coverage, collateral, and guarantees. So in our commercial finance division, coverage is net income over interest plus principal is greater than 1.25. Our debt service coverage ratio is greater than 1.25, oftentimes 1.6 or 2, or just depending on the business. Our collateral, where the ADA participation amount is less than or equal to 75% of the asset value. So we've got coverage in the collateral. And then in addition to that, the guarantees are generally required when we're doing commercial financing. So kind of you're covered by the cash, you're covered by the collateral, and you're covered by a guarantee in our commercial financing.
John, net income before or after taxes?
And that's after tax net income.
Okay.
And in terms of project development and infrastructure development, because we are working in from a kind of project financing point of view, we have a lot more flexibility. We use the term deploying patient capital and working alongside businesses over the long term. Just a good example was with the Red Dog Mine Road in Port, where we knew that the early stage was going to have some hiccups, so we, you know, had established reserve accounts, put together long-term agreements, which were critical to these types of project financing arrangements. You know, making sure that we have you know, adequate collateral, but then it's a trade-off of what type of guarantee do you need. So just in general, in terms of coverage for our project development, infrastructure development, we have the expected return on investment for a project, and that should be greater than our ADA portfolio return. But then should also be risk adjusted for the risk of the project. So, but in terms of a floor, we have the ability to make safe investments in our invested portfolio, and that generates you know, a few percent to several percent per year. And so we would use that as the as a floor for an ADA development project. And then in terms of our ADA investment amounts, in order to secure our 735,000 shareholders, make sure when we take a look at the exit value and off ramps for a project that, that we're made whole and we make that adequate return. And then when it comes to guarantees, that part is really dependent on what we have in terms of collateral and coverage. You know, where we have you know, risk-adjusted returns, which are, you know, more than adequate, and where we're heavily over-collateralized. So if we've got $100 million collateral against a $25 million loan, then we may not need that same type of a guarantee. But if we've got $30 million of collateral on a $25 million loan, then we would look at other forms of securing our shareholders' interest in the project.
And that tends to drive the reserve accounts, really.
Yeah, yeah. And reserve accounts is one of the tools that's used in a project financing, as well as reaching out and looking towards non-project related assets to help secure a development financing. And
yeah, that's why they're partially recourse financing. So the Rory's, an interest of that we've taken on some of the projects outside the project. Some of those have been done in Texas or even other states. So we're always looking for collateral. So like with loan participation, you want to guarantee. In the other programs, you're looking for something sometimes beyond the collateral, because when you sell collateral, you never get the full market amount. But on the other hand, one thing I wanted to mention was I do think we're well set up to do fixed rate long-term financing, because unlike the banks, we're a non-depository lender. So the banks have to have certain leverage points to be able to pay out money when you go to the bank, and that restricts the leverage they have. And we don't have that. So as Mr. Beadle said, if we price the money correctly on a long-term loan, then we've got the fixed cost of the money and then the amount we're making over that. So our risk really isn't interest rate risk. It's really opportunity cost. Should we have tied up that much money, or could we have done better? But that's much less risky than the other scenario that Mr. Beadle put forward for the banks. So.
Which is why when we started looking at rates, the first place to look at is what we're making now in our investments. And that's a first benchmark. We should be greater than that.
Yes.
Which right now is pretty easy.
Right.
And that's a typical business.
Just a quick confirmation that I understand the slide. Under collateral and commercial finance, it says at parity with originator. So that means whatever that collateral is, our respective positions are in proportion to the loan amount, right?
Generally, yes. And Chris, correct me if I'm not there. Yes. Yes. So if it's a 90-10, then
the collateral.
90-10 on the collateral, 50-50 on the collateral. And then I want to mention again that the feature that the commercial finance has is that it always has that guarantor, which may be different from a project financing, where we might not have a guarantor.
Yeah, so next thing you can say, parapasu.
You could say it, but we want
to. But all the bankers.
But Commissioner Parity, on the aspect of, for example, on the Endeavor project, we had that particular rig appraised three different times as we progressed the projects. To make sure that it was, at the time, the price of crude was up, so that it was actually going up in value over those three appraisals.
But then also factoring in, distressed situations.
Sure.
What's the orderly exit look like?
Yeah, also, I think, but we also always put in our internal documents that it's exit strategy. So that's something that was done a while ago, and we don't always show it with you, but we've always got what happens. Yeah, that's always part of the strategy.
John, is that it?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
Dan?
Yeah, just one question. I did try to reconcile these two pie charts. We didn't quite reconcile, and I think it's according to how we define the industry.
Through the chair to the board. The one is strictly loan participation. This other view includes our project development and infrastructure development program.
In this column.
So the view provided in this presentation is strictly our commercial finance division.
Okay.
But in your board packets, it includes our project development and asset management and infrastructure development assets. So it uses the term capacity projects at the top. So.
Sure.
All right, next up is the Interior Energy Project update.
And then that's Gene. And
I'd also like to mention that...
5-minute break, maybe, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, but before that, I'd like to mention that there's a Salix representative here, Vice President. He introduced himself here with Bob Lafferty. He's here. So we welcome Bob to listen in. And if he has any comments, just raise your hand and we'll bring you up.
Please be here, and I have to express my apologies in about 5 minutes after we catch my plane.
Okay.
So I won't be able to hear all the presentation, but I'll catch up.
Duly noted.
Okay, so break or
wait till 2:30?